listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Hello and welcome into the episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. As always, I'm your host, Don Knock. I'm joined by my co-host, Paolo Alves. Paolo, go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff.
What's up, everyone? Y'all can find me at Paolo Alves NBA on Twitter. That's PAOLOALVESNBA. From everything I do, from articles to podcasts to live shows on Twitter Spaces, we'll find itself linked on there.
And of course, you can follow me at Don Knock on Twitter. You can follow the pod at Apollo Launchpad. You can follow the Apollo HOU main account. Follow Apollo HOU on Twitch. We will be doing some more Twitch streams, hopefully coming up here shortly. And you can follow the Apollo Podcast Network on YouTube. So with that said, we got a little quick episode for y'all today. We're going to do a little bit of a recap of the Suns game yesterday and talk about the NCAA tournament that just started this weekend. It's going to go through the rest of the weekend. There's going to be a lot of really important players to watch for the Rockets' future. They are going to have a top pick in this draft, and they're going to have another pick around 15 to 18, some range near that. But start out with the Suns game yesterday. Myself and our co-host of the Twitter Safe Spaces, or the Rockets Twitter Safe Spaces, we got comp tickets to go to the game. We sat down with a bunch of other media people, Rockets Twitter people. It was super fun. Me and Will got a picture with GM Rafael Stone, which is awesome. Super nice guy. I told him that he's doing a great job drafting and keep up the great work. It was really exciting to meet him. We did our Rockets Twitter meetup at halftime. It was really awesome. Ben DuBose came to that. Jackson Gatlin dropped in for that as well. Some other Rockets Twitter people, Taylor Pate, Paolo contributor as well. And then a few other people, but after the game, we also had, the Q&A. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. So going back to the game, it was a pretty good game. Started out with Jaylen, having a strong start and kind of having a little bit of a duel with Devin Booker. Go ahead and talk about, the game from your perspective. Me and Will missed a decent amount of it, kind of being there and interacting and doing all that stuff. So, what was your big takeaways from the game, just real quick?
Oh, man. It was a pretty ideal game for a rebuilding team. We kept it close for most of the game. Our young guys got the reps. Our backcourt had a really efficient game, both of them. I think if we're going into specifics, Jaylen had a couple of highlights. He had that crossover into a three. He was shooting really well from three. He was 4-6. Just a good development because his percentages for the season are picking up as well. He had 22-2-3. I think for the season he's up to almost a 53.5 or 4 true shooting, which is approaching league average. And considering how badly he started and most of the rookies started this year, it's really good that he's finally picking it up. I think he's averaging over 20 points per game since he turned 20. That's 15 games. That's a good stretch of games already. Hopefully he can keep it up. So he had a good game. KPJ also had a good game, and he was really hot from three. He was 5 of 10. He had 21 points. He had 4 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. So it was a really complete game from him. And then besides that, all you can ask for as a rebuilding team is to play the young guys. KJ Martin played 18 minutes. That's not too much, but at least 18 is pretty much the borderline or the minimum I would deem, it's not the right word, but I'll call it acceptable, for most of these like lower tier young guys like KJ, like Christopher, and they both met that. We saw Deshaun Knicks get some run at actual point guard, within the actual rotation, and he couldn't make a shot, but it's still good that we're giving him these reps because I think he definitely has a really bright future ahead of him. He only played 12 minutes, but that's still better. If he can get 12 minutes a game, that's still better than sending him to the T League and having him play a bunch there. He's clearly above that level by now. And then we also saw Şengün, who had that highlight play where he dropped McGee and then tried to lob it to himself off the backboard, which didn't quite work, but it still went in. It was a typical Şengün play where it sometimes doesn't look the best, but I mean, if it works in the end, there's no problem with it. He also got 25 minutes of playing time. Salas found a way to incorporate him into the lineup. Hopefully he can keep doing that, whether it was by design or because Christian would have one of his worst first halves of the entire season. He also went down to 27 minutes. So I think, yeah, overall, as I said, I got everything I wanted out of the game. Young guys look good, got playing time, lost in the end, still the worst team in the league, still managed to keep the worst case scenario of dropping to five being the worst case scenario, and that's key because for me, I think there's a big drop off after five. So yeah, as I said, it's an ideal game. Suns won because Devin Booker caught fire out there in the fourth, and you take those like you lost to a better team.
Yeah, from our perspective, the big takeaway me and Will had was just watching Coach Silas. Coach Silas basically ran Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. as a platoon. So those guys were in the game the exact same minutes. They were together the entire first quarter and the entire third quarter. Then their minutes, they came in about halfway through the second and fourth quarter, and that's, how the rotation ran. I haven't really seen him do that. That's usually like the James Harden rotation. And me and Will, and I can't remember how much you've been calling for, but there's been a lot of people calling for the stagger of KPJ and Jalen's. That way you can get more Jalen on ball. I would say Jalen having on ball reps really wasn't an issue in this one. I think KPJ did a good job distributing, and making sure Jalen was involved in the offense. 15 shots for Jalen, tied for a team high with KPJ. So, good on that front. But deploying them in this platoon manner, when they pulled them out, then you had Knicks and I believe it was Christopher and Knicks. They both came in at the same time. Kind of squirrely the way they did that, but that unit did all right in the first half. Not incredible in the third quarter. That's when the team, it kind of got back in it to close the half. Coming out of halftime, it got away from them a little bit, and then they kind of reeled it back in. And then the fourth quarter, like you mentioned, that's when Booker really went off and just kind of iced the game for the Suns. But I just want to highlight the other play that was really exciting in the arena was the play where KPJ got a steal and then bounced the ball off the ground to himself and then dunked it. That was really exciting. Had the crowd going for sure. A lot of the Jalen plays, he had a big three kind of early in the game when the Suns opened up a gap kind of in the first quarter, and then the Rockets reined him back in. And Jalen had a couple big shots to kind of keep the Rockets in contact there early. And it just seems like, well, it seemed like this game actually, just specifically, Jalen was, he really understood when he needed to get going. And even though Devin Booker got hot at the end and closed out for the Suns, Torrey Craig also got hot for the Suns. I think he didn't miss a single shot, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 8 of 8 for Torrey Craig. So when Torrey Craig shoots 100% from the field, you're gonna lose most of the time, unfortunately. But it seemed like, Jalen really is getting a better feel of when he needs to involve himself in the offense. Early on this season, people were really not getting on to him, but pointing out that, Jalen's not as aggressive as he could be. Sometimes he just needs to try to take over. And it seems like he's finally hit that point in his young career where he said, hey, look, Christian Wood may not have it going tonight. You know, end up finishing with 18 points. Not a terrible night, but he took it on himself. He said, I need to get going because no one else may get going here, and really kept the team in contact that way. Like you said, for a rebuilding team, we want to get one of these top draft picks, and we're going to, you know, get into that in the next few segments about what those draft picks may be and you know, what they're looking like so far, at least a few of them in the tournament. But to end the game with a loss, a competitive loss, and really seeing the young guys play a lot, you know, definitely a positive takeaway. I'm going to shift gears a little bit now. We did also attend, me and Will, aka Bias Houston, we did attend the Q&A after the game with Josh Christopher and Alperen Şengün. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We didn't, we weren't actually supposed to go in. We got like the comp tickets early, and then we talked to some people afterwards to see if we could get the passes to come in. We were able to get down like pretty low with our passes. Şengün, his English is coming along really well. He talked most of the night in English. He used the translator like maybe two or three times. Josh Christopher was, you know, really good interview. Really was pretty candid about the incident involved, not incident, I should say, but the game where we played the Hawks and Trae Young kind of got him a couple times when he was trying to defend Trae Young, and was very open about that and how that was really his welcome to the NBA moment. Şengün said his welcome to the NBA moment was when KJ Martin dunked on him in practice, and he was like, hey, you know, these guys are, you know, built a little bit different. That was, you know, very interesting to hear, because a lot of times players don't really disclose what happens at practice. You know, you get the little blips from the media of the small stretches of the game where they are allowed to film, and then that's really all you hear. So getting a behind-the-scenes look at what happened in practice was definitely cool to hear about. Rico Rodriguez, you know, another Rockets super fan, was there, along with Craig helping host it. And, you know, Rico didn't really rock the boat too much. He just kind of said, you know, I'm a really positive fan. He likes the direction the team's going, and you know, was pumping up Şengün and Josh Christopher. The last few things I'll touch on. They asked Şengün how he liked his shirt. It had said, you know, I'm so happy on it. It had a picture of him, and he said the picture didn't look like him. And everyone, you know, thought that was pretty funny. He said, I think Craig said he needed more facial hair on the picture. So got a little bit of humor there early on to kind of break the ice for everyone. And then, you know, after the Q&A was wrapping up, you know, Will, our guy, tried to get a picture with Christian Wood. Someone next to him got a picture, and so he was trying to jump in and get a picture with Christian Wood. And Wood, after he took the first picture, just turned around and walked out before Will could get his request in. And he didn't.
Damn, I got dude, like he's a number one fan.
Yeah. Number one fan, and couldn't get the picture with him. But, you know, early bird got the worm on that one. And then to close the night out, I asked Jalen Green if he was going to change his number to 4, and he said, you know, next year. Gave a little cheeky smile and then turned around and walked off. So it was fun. It was a really enjoyable night. We were super excited. We met a bunch of people. We met some people that run the Rockets account. We met a few other people from, you know, Rockets brass. But good night overall. And
let me touch on that Jalen changing his number, man.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, I know 4 probably means a lot to him, but 0 was such a cool number for someone like him. Like the nickname just writes itself, you know, like Jalen Green, 0G, zero gravity. He's a dunker, like he glides in the air.
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. I kind of hoped that, I don't know, for some reason it would stick with him and he'd rather keep it. But I mean, if he wants number 4, I think it's going to make those jerseys that people bought season 1 a lot more unique, at least. And I mean, ultimately, it's his choice. It's not really that big of a deal. I just thought I'd chime in and say, man, 0G would have been a really cool nickname for him. And now we're back to the drawing board, trying to find the one with 4. I think all people have come up with was JG4, right?
Which, I mean, JG4 is not the right nickname. I did like the 0G nickname. It didn't stick to the level of, you know, some of the other nicknames we have. Like, it didn't stick the way Gary Bird did. Or I'm trying to think who else on this team has a good nickname. I mean, C. Wood is just, you know, his name and stuff like that. But, yeah, you know, we'll see what the nickname comes out. I'm sure I've heard Green Mamba thrown around. That's just kind of like kind of like a pretty generic one as well. But I think that's gonna do it for us in this segment. When we come back, we're gonna touch on Jalen Duren and Chet Holmgren, who played earlier today in the NCAA tournament. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And continuing on here on the Launchpad podcast. So today, Thursday, March 17th, we had the NCAA tournament start officially. They had the playing games the last 2 days, but you know, for our purposes, we're not super concerned with, you know, most of the guys that were in those playing games. But we did have some big action earlier today. Memphis played. Jalen Duren might be a guy who's a little bit too low for the Rockets, the first overall pick, unless something kind of shakes crazy. But, you know, he is going to be important coming up because another guy that a lot of Rockets fans are interested in, Chet Holmgren, they're going to be facing off in the second round game for both of those teams. So it'll be a good test for Holmgren. It'll be a good test for Duren as well. What did you see? Let's start with Chet. You know, what did you see in this game today? He did a lot of different things. He had a pretty wild stat line. What was your big takeaways from Chet's game today?
Yeah, so taking into consideration that he was playing 16th seed, right? He was playing Georgia State or whatever it was, and that their center got hurt like really early on, first half. I think end of the first half, I'm pretty sure. And so that made it easier. He was clearly the biggest guy on the court, but still, he showcased pretty much everything that you expect out of him and what makes him the prospect that he is, except for the three ball. He was 0-for-2. He didn't really get many chances to shoot the ball. He's not quite the guy that's going to shoot contested shots. He's mostly going to space the floor and shoot open ones with really good efficiency. But he had like crazy stat line: 19 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists, 7 blocks, 2 steals, and 61.5% from the field. And this is the tournament, right? These are not scrub teams, and a lot of people pointed to Chet's monster stat line that's coming against scrub teams. So it was definitely one of, it was definitely an imposing way of starting the tournament and saying, "Hey, this is what I'm here for." He mostly got these stats when Drew Timmy was not on the floor, so that's maybe an indicator that he is incredibly efficient if you look at his stats the entire season, but the volume isn't too high. And maybe the volume isn't too high because with Drew Timmy, one of the best players in college basketball, that's not a high prospect because it's that type of player that just succeeds in college and is never going to be a high-level player at the NBA level. And then maybe his stats don't pop out as much when it comes to volume because, you know, he plays with Drew Timmy, and when he wasn't playing with Drew Timmy, he was doing really well. So, yeah, ultimately, he was like blocking shots. He offenses are literally scared of challenging him at the rim, and he still gets 7 blocks. It should be a pretty good statement. He got a block. He got a steal in inbounds play, and he like took it all the way, like kind of like a guardly CKPJ did this a lot of times. Like he deflected the pass was on the floor, he had the agility as a 7-footer to lean down, dribble the ball off the floor. He didn't have to pick it up, he just dribbled it off the floor really low, and he did this with enough quickness to actually be able to take it coast to coast in transition and dunk it, and it was an end one because he was shoved and he still dunked it. But that was really impressive. And then besides that, I mean, something that I was pointing out on Twitter is he has a frame kind of similar to Christian Woods, where he doesn't have a lot of muscle. He's pretty thin, right? But even though he's pretty thin, we see Christian Wood plenty of time just slip screens because he's so thin that if he set a hard screen, it wouldn't do that much, right? So he just slips it every single time. Chet at Gonzaga sets hard screens. Like, he's not sweeping any screen. He's taking the contact, and he's creating an advantage for his guards. And to me, that's a really good sign that he's not afraid to play through contact, and he's not afraid to be a selfless player and take the hit physically, something that doesn't show up in the stat line, something that's not going to give him more points, something that's not going to give him a mismatch, something that's going to be punished by his teammates and contribute towards winning basketball games. And I think it was a really, really good to see that he's willing to do these things. And I can't really tell how long he's been doing them. I just recently noticed, I was listening to Ali Khan on LOR, and he was talking about how screens work. And so I started paying more attention to that recently, and so this was the first game of Chet I've watched since listening to that pod, and it really popped out of the screen now that I'm more familiar with it.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me the big takeaways today, I knew the Chet handle situation was about what he just put on display today. I did think he struggled a little bit in the beginning of the game with Georgia State's post players. They were very physical with him. I think later on in the game, he kind of started adjusting to that level of physicality. Those guys also got in foul trouble, so they had to play a little bit more tentative. And then their main guy got injured and had to leave the game. So their main guy on defense against Chet. So, you know, we didn't get the full game sample size the way I would have really wanted to of, you know, how he looked against those guys. I think depending on how he matches up against Duren, they may put Duren on Drew Timmy or they may put him on Chet. We'll just have to see how that shakes out. And then same thing, the opposite direction. I would assume that Chet is going to guard Duren because, like, who else is he really going to be guarding on Memphis, right? I doubt they put him on Bates. They'll probably put someone else on Bates. But my takeaway from this game, he looked really good as a rim protector. He looked really good finishing in traffic. He had a couple of putbacks. The rebounding early on, it seemed like he was struggling with some of the rebounding. His boxing out wasn't super crisp. His position was pretty good, but it seemed like he really tried to just rely on being, you know, having super long arms, super long wingspan, and wasn't as positionally sound as a rebounder. You know, I've been beating the drum for, you know, just get guys with length and get guys that are good at boxing out and good positional rebounders. And, you know, he has length. He has, you know, some positional awareness as a rebounder, but I wasn't super impressed with his boxing out. Some of that is frame, but I wouldn't attribute it all to frame because when he was on offense, it seemed like he did a good job, as you mentioned, setting screens. He set some pretty good screens, especially for, you know, how thin of a guy he is. He also did a good job sealing in the paint to create driving lanes for his ball handlers. I thought that was one thing that stood out to me from this game as well. And then, you know, just shooting wise, the shot looks good. They didn't use him as versatilely as they normally have in other Gonzaga games I've watched. You know, sometimes they've ran him off a lot of different actions, try to get him shooting off the catch a little bit more. It seemed like this game, he was just kind of spotting up a lot of the times that he wasn't involved in the offense. But this game looked like Gonzaga may, you know, be pressed towards the end. And then they just went on like a 16 to, I'm not sure what Georgia's side of that run was. And it was pretty much over after that.
At one point it was 16-0.
16-0? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the average fan at home, they're watching this game. Like, oh, you know, there's a chance Gonzaga could, you know, lose this game. But they really weren't doing anything in that first, you know, two thirds of the game where it was like Gonzaga's really pressing here, and it seems like they're desperate to try to win this game. They were out there doing, you know, the simple things that they do, letting Timmy cook in the post, having Chet run DHO, having Chet run some screening actions. And they were content with that, and that the run came, and that was it. They never really had to make, you know, substantial adjustments. Georgia State had to make adjustments to them because they got in foul trouble. They lost their defensive anchor. You're going to have to do things differently at that point. So Gonzaga really, they were really the aggressors. They were really the ones that forced action. And the Georgia State players getting in foul trouble early on was a big indicator of that. So
go ahead. They also, it felt like the entire game, at least even leading up to that run, that they were just trading, like there was very little defense being played besides Chet. And they were just both, like, Gonzaga was getting whatever they wanted in the post with Timmy. And on the other end, like, so it felt like what Gonzaga was getting, like, Timmy in the post was reliable, right? And then Georgia was hitting a lot of those contested mid-range shots, a lot of shots that you didn't expect a team of that caliber to hit. And eventually, those shots just stopped going down. And they had to face Chet a lot more, and at that point, that was over. They kept up there for a while those shots were falling. But then when it came to, okay, so nobody's hot anymore, Gonzaga's offense was just way more reliable than theirs, and it just ended up killing because it reached the point where the mid-range shot's not falling. You're not really getting open threes, and then at the same time, if you're getting denied at the rim every single time, so just that's how a 16-0 run works, you know. Just it reached the point where there was just no way they could score until Gonzaga let off the gas a little bit and set some of the main guys.
Do you have anything you want to talk about Duren, or do you want to just go into how you think they're going to match up now? Sorry, Duren's game today against.
I was watching Iowa when they were playing, but just looking at his stat line, it didn't look too impressive. I think he was 4 of 11 from the field. He had 11 rebounds. He had one steal, one block. So box score watching, didn't look like anything spectacular. But going into their matchup, I'm not really sure Duren is the player to judge Chet's post defense on, because yeah, he's powerful, yeah, he's really physical, but he's not a great post player IMO. He's probably going to be more of a play finisher rather than someone who creates his own shot. And I'm sure if he gets the ball like really close to the basket, he'll be able to put Chet under the basket and go for the dunks.
For me, that's actually more important to see how Chet's going to defend that. Because when you get to the NBA and you have Chet against Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic or, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, when we play whatever team he signs a minimum contract
a minimum deal with.
Yeah. Worst case scenario, you just throw a double team at those guys, right? If they're really cooking, that's a solution there. You don't necessarily have to have him guarding the post one-on-one all the time. You can double trap, you know, whatever the case may be. I want to see him against someone in the role that you're describing, a play finisher who's very athletic, who can catch the lobs and is going to really like create that vertical spacing element and put a lot of pressure on the rim, because like a Clint Capella type, right? Because those are the type of players that you're going to have to make sure Chet's rim protection holds up against at the next level. Joel Embiid backing down is going to give you time to, you know, think what your defense wants to do. Clint Capella setting a screen and rolling to the rim, you have to make a split decision on how are we going to defend this. So that's what I want to see, and that's what I'm going to be looking for mostly probably in that matchup.
I think it will be telling, and what I'm looking for is him denying those types of opportunities, because, like, denying the ball from the play finisher is someone that he'll very much be able to do, if not next game at the NBA level, just because you don't really use physicality to do that. Even if you get sealed off, like his wingspan is so insanely big that he can disrupt lobs and he can disrupt entry passes if Durant gets really deep, like I'll call it post position, and close enough to the basket for it to count as the types of plays you're referring to. So yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how well he does denying that. But ultimately, I think we'll be disappointed to know that it's probably going to be Drew Timmy defending Durant primarily, but we'll see.
Yeah, the other thing I want to see if Chet gets matched up against Durant is how does that rebounding battle go? We talked about the rebounding a little while ago. That's something I want to see how Chet's going to battle, because that's absolutely going to be something that he has to prove the next level. You know, can he, like we talked about earlier, can he get a good box out in? Can he use his length to overcome his lack of physical strength in the rebounding battle?
He is averaging 27 minutes, Chet's averaging 9.6 rebounds. That's probably going to be 10 by the time this update with his latest game, since he had 17, so let's call it 10 rebounds. And Durant, I'm checking right now, his average on 25 minutes, so 2 minutes less, is 8 rebounds. So they're pretty, I'd say Chet's been a little bit better, but they're pretty on par, so that will be definitely fun to keep up with.
Yeah, so that's a game I think is coming Saturday. I think that's when game's gonna happen. So we're gonna go to a break real quick here, and then when we come back, we're gonna talk about some of the games that are coming tomorrow, Friday, March 18th. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And rolling into our final segment here on the Launchpad Podcast. Tomorrow, Friday, March 18th, NCAA tournament has already been in full swing and is going to continue going on tomorrow, and some more big prospects that the Rockets are going to be interested in will play tomorrow. Mainly the Duke Blue Devils are going to play tomorrow with Paolo Banchero and AJ Griffin. Purdue Boilermakers are going to play with their guard Jaden Ivey, and then of course Auburn Tigers are going to play tomorrow with their forward Jabari Smith. So, Prague, go ahead. Who do you want to talk about first out of this group? You want to do the Duke guys first, and then we'll do Auburn second?
Let's go for the Duke guys first.
Okay.
So, they play a team that I've never heard about. It's called CSU Fullerton, or whatever never heard of them before.
State University Fullerton, I think.
I see. So, regardless, what I'm looking for out of Duke is I want them to put the ball in Banchero's hands. He's the best ISO scorer. He's in the entire country. I promise you, if you space the four and you let him cook one-on-one in space, there's nobody on that team that's going to be able to stop him. And getting him on a roll is going to be key for any aspirations that Duke has. And then as a scout and then looking at him from a draft perspective, what we need to see out of him for him to be number one, let's say, what do you need for him to be number one? I need to see him be the guy and be efficient at it. I think the only way he becomes a number one on most boards is if he shoots well enough from three to bring that up from 30%. To all the way up to 36% over the entire journey. So I need to see that. I need to see him be confident enough to showcase some more of his perimeter skills, which doesn't really fit with Duke's system. And we've been complaining about that all year because I really believe he's a better player than what Duke lets him do. So from Banchero, that's what I'm looking forward to. I want him to take over. And if he doesn't take over, Duke's going to default back into their system. And while that is a higher floor system, the ceiling is also lower. So that's definitely something I'm looking forward to. And then about AJ Griffin, I want to see how his athleticism is looking, because he was a uber athletic guy before the injury he had at the beginning of the season, and he's looked kind of flat ever since. And he's a really physical guy. He's really big. He's shooting really well from three, so I don't think that's a question. So about him, it's going to be how engaged are you on defense? Are you getting blown by, because you've been getting blown by a bit, and that's a concern, because if you're not an elite defender, really, are you really a top three pick with what you've shown so far? So yeah, was the shooting a fluke, or is it going to keep going? How are you defending the perimeter? Are you getting blown by? And how does your athleticism look finishing at the rim when it matters most?
Yeah, we talked about this in a space earlier as well, but I'm going to kind of just reiterate it here. Duke's late game offense has not been elite. And early on in the games, Paolo has really, you know, been impactful. They let him do a lot of the creation and that type of stuff. And when the game gets tight, you know, they start running more sets. They don't just let him create as freely. And, you know, in the ACC tournament, that really became a problem. They got tight. They started not, you know, letting him facilitate. He started facilitating sometimes and just, you know, passes weren't crisp. Things got sloppy and stuff like that. So I want to see what their late game offense looks like. They should blow this team out. And as we say that, I think Kentucky looks like they're about to lose. Iowa also lost earlier. So, you know, you never know what happens in tournaments like these. But also, you know, Duke has a lot of really good players. So they should win this game. And Paolo Banchero getting off to a hot start is going to be pivotal to see, like, what they're going to do, letting him create late in the games. I'm definitely looking for that. The three-point shooting, I don't know if he'll be able to, you know, have a three-point shooting renaissance in these couple of games. There's going to have a lot of stuff go right. But, you know, over to AJ Griffin, just be a play finisher, be a lengthy defensive wing, and just let those tools show through in this tournament. That's all I'm really looking for from him. You have anything else on Duke? You ready to jump?
Wait. Okay, that's going to overtime. Like, as you were speaking, Kentucky versus St. Peter's was ending. It's going to overtime with 71-71. Kentucky had 20 seconds to get a shot up, and the shot they got up ended up being an air ball, so that went really poorly. I think that the ball handler slipped. But yeah. I'm sorry, I was completely out of focus. You wanna go over who next?
Yeah, let's jump to Jabari and go ahead and talk about him real quick.
Yeah, so Jabari and Auburn play against, man, why do I always get these names that I can't pronounce? Is that Jacksonville State? Let's pretend like it is. It's like shortened where I'm looking at it. So yeah, about Jabari, what does he need? What am I looking forward to him? Auburn's really reliant on their guards play, and their guards are not very good. That type of guard is really small, trying to shoot threes from really far away, and that's what's going to space or kind of space your offense, even though their percentages aren't great, right? And it's been working for them so far. I wonder, with them getting trapped more in the tournament, and we saw them fail against it when they lost in their conference tournament. When that happens, we're going to need to see Jabari take over, and we're going to need to see him create his own shot. And that's something that he struggled with. He can shoot over people, but if he needs to put the ball on the floor, if he needs to drive, or if he needs to generate space via a step back so he can let his jumper fly, he's struggled. And that's the main concern with him, is if you can't create your own shot, then you're going to be an elite role player. And drafting that high, it's not terrible to have an elite role player like, to get an elite role player like him. He's a pretty safe prospect, but you'd want some more upside, right? So what I want to see from him is that I want to see him show that upside. I want to see him take over and be the guy that Auburn needs him to be.
Yeah, I've been hammering this point as well. I'm going to bring it up again here. Jabari needs to show something with his handle, show something in his shot creation. We'll see how much he's allowed to do that. Like you mentioned, you know, their guards are really, unfortunately, a focal point of their offense, and they haven't gone to like more of a situation where they let their wings create. But, you know, we'll see how much he can step into that role. I also want to see if they end up using him in rim protection at all as a small ball five, or even a help side shot blocker. Those are really two things that it's going to be big for him to prove that he can be effective at. There's been questions about his lift, especially defensively. He's someone that can jump, but he kind of has to load up a little bit. So we'll see what that looks like. I'm not really worried about, not, I won't say worried, but, you know, Jacksonville State is not a team that's going to, you know, out athleticism Auburn. Auburn has, you know, decent athletes, and Jabari can fit in on any athletic, he can fit on the court with, you know, any group of athletes, right? He's someone that is very athletic himself. But I think the biggest thing for me in the Auburn game, just they just need to advance and just give him another opportunity to continue to be in pressure situations. Hopefully they don't have a lot of pressure in this situation. I think it's going to go a lot smoother than it has for some of these other teams. You know, Auburn's been very good this entire season, and he doesn't have to do too much. So I think that's what he has up going for him as well. Any final thoughts on Jabari's game tomorrow?
No, I'm ready to move on to Ivy.
All right. And then we'll do that right now. So Jaden Ivy, guard for Purdue. Purdue is playing Yale. So again, another matchup that they should win. For anyone that didn't catch Jaden Ivy this year, you know, super athletic point guard. He shot hot this season, but last year really wasn't known as a big shooter. He also has some decent playmaking chops, but may not be a traditional like lead guard when he gets to the NBA. We'll just see, you know, what kind of situation he gets thrown in and what his development trajectory looks like in that sense. But what are you looking for tomorrow from him? You know, he's a sophomore. He's the first one that we've talked about that is a sophomore. So he has a little bit more experience. Given that, you know, what do you want to see out of him tomorrow when they play Yale?
From him, there's like, he has some things that he's really good at, and then there's like some gaping holes in his game. I need to see a floater. That's one of the things that is the make or break for him. He's really athletic. And so just like Ja Morant, he's going to need a floater because teams are going to overplay his drive, and he's not really a mid-range shooter either. Just like we've emphasized with Jalen Green, a guy that quick needs to have a floater or a mid-range shot. And then besides that, Ivy's shooting has fallen off a cliff. First half of the season, he was a 45% shooter, and ever since, imagine how bad you have to be at shooting for that to have dropped all the way down to 35.6. That's 10 percentage points that it's dropped. And his shooting was really something that made me more comfortable with drafting him, where, okay, worst case scenario, he's a good shooter, so he's not going to completely bust, right? So he needs to show that the shooting, although inconsistent, wasn't a fluke at the beginning of the season, and that's going to be a hard tack to shake. And then besides that, I need to see him lock in on defense. He has the tools to be a really good defender, but he sometimes falls asleep. Purdue is one of the worst defensive teams in the entire country, so that's going to be key for them. And the last thing I need from him is, as Rockets, if I'm interested in him, it's because he's a true point guard. If he's another shooting guard like Jalen, who's uber athletic, I'm not interested. We already have Jalen. I'm pretty confident that Jalen's going to be what we think he will be. So I need to see him run the offense. He's the best player on that team, so I need their coach to trust him and give him the ball and let him make all the plays. When he's on the floor, let him be the guy and see how he handles that pressure. It's also something I'm looking forward to, because when you look at Purdue's path, they're playing Yale, and then they're playing the winner between Texas and Virginia Tech. So if they get Texas, that's a tough team. Even Virginia Tech is a pretty tough team. And then if they win that, they face Kentucky, another tough team. And if they win that, they face Baylor, more than likely. So they're going to have a really tough path. This is going to be one of the only like easy games that they're going to have. So it's definitely something to look forward to, because I could see Purdue's run getting spoiled at pretty much every step of the way.
Yeah, if they end up making the Final Four, even, they have really, like you said, gone through a gauntlet. Texas basketball has been kind of up and down this year, so I wouldn't mention them as like, you know, a true upper echelon team. I think Purdue could probably handle them. As much as it pains me to say that, you know, we do live in Texas. Sometimes I like to, you know, homer take the Texas teams, but man, yeah, definitely right on board with you in terms of proving if he can be a lead guard. And man, there's been a lot of guards that have really stepped up in the tournament, and you know, that's really propelled them into, you know, the next echelon. When you're as athletic as he is, you can just make a lot of stuff happen. And when it's one game sample sizes, you know, that can have a really big effect. People bring up John Morant. I mean, John Morant, I think his playmaking was at such an advanced stage.
Oh, it was Ivy's current playmaking tenfold. Like, it's not even close.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if I would say that's a good one-to-one comparison, but, you know, John Morant is someone who, if you watched John Morant when he had that tournament run, it was him. And I think the guy's name was Cozart, was the other guy that was on that Murray State team. And they were just literally doing everything for that team. It was unbelievable. And John Morant was just really willing his team through most of those games. So if Ivy can have a run like that, you never know. He could push himself. You know, maybe it's depending on what a team needs in that top three, you know, he could push himself up significantly more. But I think that would be in the top 15% of outcomes for him in this tournament. You know, these other guys, Paolo, I think Paolo can have a good impact for Duke. Duke has a lot of good players. I think Jabari can have a really good impact. I mean, Jabari is just, it's hard to guard that archetype. And then Chet already had, you know, great games. I think Ivy, he really is going to have to maximize what he does to move up in the standings here. But, you know, it's all going to happen tomorrow and not long now. I mean, we're one sleep away from, you know, all these great games. So I think that's going to do it for us. We are up against it for our third segment. So go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff, Prod.
Yeah, y'all can find me at Paul Alves NBA on Twitter. That's PAULOALVESNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts to articles to live shows on the Twitter Spaces post game and otherwise, we'll find the self link on there.
And you can follow me at Don Knock, of course, on Twitter. Follow the pod at Apollo Launchpad. Follow the Apollo HOU main account and the Twitch and YouTube accounts, like I mentioned earlier. If you want to get the pod the night before, subscribe on Apple or Spotify. Otherwise, we post the links the following day on Twitter, and of course, you can get it there. So that's going to do it for us. We're going to get back to watching some of these NCAA games. Is the Kentucky game over yet, or is that still in overtime?
It's 1 minute and a half to go, and it's still tied. I mean, it's Kentucky up by one, but St. Peter's has someone on the free throw line.
Cool. So, yeah, we'll get back to watching those, and you know, hopefully by the time we talk to y'all next time, we have good, you know, fundamental analysis on a lot of these guys and what they've looked like in the tournament. So until next time, y'all be safe and go Rockets.